You're listening to Pacifica's Peace Watch. I'm Verna Avery Brown. In a continuing peace vigil in front of the White House, Code Pink, a coalition of women committed to creating a peaceful world, stands strong on their beliefs. Despite the oftentimes freezing temperatures in the nation's capital during the winter months of November, December, and January, women from all around the country are maintaining an unrelenting presence in front of the president's residence, calling for an end to U.S. aggression in Iraq. Christy Laughlin of Global Exchange recently visited the studios of Peace Watch, where we talked about the vigil and the rolling fast of Code Pink.
There's a message in the pink.
Mm-hmm.
Say there's more to pretty in pink.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a message for women and to rise up and stand for peace and justice. It's a play on Code Pink, which is a takeoff on the administration's and Bush's Code Red,
mm-hmm.
which says there is imminent danger from outside, possibly from terrorists. And our message is there is indeed imminent danger, but it's actually coming from this administration, that there is a threat, but it's a threat to all of our safety and our security because of the policies being pursued by the administration and war on Iraq.
How many women in particular are hearing your message?
Well, I think the message is resonating all around the country with women. We get emails and phone calls every day about women delighted and to see that women are stepping out and taking to the streets and calling other women. I think there's a real hunger for women's voices right now to speak out for justice and for peace. And as we were getting endorsers for this women's vigil and for this movement every day, we're having their solidarity efforts, vigils and fasts by women being initiated all around the country.
How would you characterize the women's peace movement around this particular war at this time? I know I've seen a lot of organizations. I've seen Grannies Against the War,
mm-hmm.
And Code Pink, and I think there are Mothers Against the War as well.
Yeah, and there's a Mothers Rising Up
mm-hmm.
movement. I mean, I think it's happening everywhere.
Are we talking about hundreds of women or thousands?
Thousands, if not millions. And I think we view the women's vigil here at the White House as a vehicle mm-hmm. for expressing some of the sentiments of women, inviting women from all walks of life, from all organizations, to come out and speak out and not be silent in the face of what's happening with going to war in Iraq and shifting billions of dollars away from needed social programs to a war machine. And so our invitation is to women to speak up, be visible, and I think our voices have been silenced.
Mm. There's one, or I would say two, women in this country who are in key positions to really influence the outcome of this war. I would say Laura Bush
mm-hmm.
and Barbara Bush. Has the women's anti-war movement attempted to contact either of them?
We are definitely trying to engage women at all levels, including the ones you just mentioned. Our hope is to engage in dialogue and with the First Lady. And in fact, we are circulating a petition as part of the women's movement, Women's Peace Vigil, that is called Listen to the Women and does address some of our demands and is addressed to both to the Mr. Bush and Laura Bush. We are trying to appeal. I think that's the beauty of women is to reach out in dialogue, try to talk and reach out to all people, including the wives.
With the risk of sounding a little, politically incorrect, I think that women, particularly Laura mm-hmm. and Barbara Bush as well, she's his mother, she's President Bush's mother, have unique talents that they could use to influence, to persuade
mm-hmm.
one's mate. I believe that there's a point in history where women actually, around a previous war, it may have been World War II, women decided not to engage in any intimacy with their husbands until they all decided to end the war.
Right, I think.
And there was a special name for that. It's escaping me now, the Salinas. Are you familiar with that at all?
Well, yeah, and I think that tradition, too. There's a story, I guess, in the Trojan War, where the Trojan women resisted in that way to say no to war. And that's certainly a tactic we are open to, but would like to try
no
all others.
Stone unturned,
exactly.
Right?
I see where opponents of the war are organizing protests if and when actual war is announced. And they're planning major protests around the country. Reverend Stuart Fitch plans to pray and send love to everyone from Saddam Hussein to President Bush, and then he'll call on his congregation to church for service. I'm wondering if a Code Pink has thought that far down the road, and it may not be that far. We see that the U.S. is setting late January as decision time for the war on Iraq. Any special strategic plans in place for if and when the war is actually announced?
Well, actually, this whole vigil, which we launched on November 17th, a month ago, and we celebrate our one-month anniversary of this vigil, was a way of taking a proactive stance, taking the initiative to say we are not going to cooperate or go down silently as you recklessly pursue war with Iraq. And instead of sitting back and waiting for the bombs to just start falling, was a way to, you know, to be proactive and mobilize and put out a call for people to engage now before the bombs start dropping. Mm-hmm. And I think there was a sense of powerlessness once the Congress voted and, you know, turned its backs, I think, on the voices of many people. Mm-hmm. And so we said, look, you know, we are not going to give up in resignation and just wait and react to the bombs falling. So this is a call now to take to the streets, be visible, make our voices heard. And we are planning actions as part of the vigil each and every day and every week. So we do are mobilizing for, you know, bigger days like the 18th, Martin Luther King's birthday, and we are also mobilizing toward International Women's Day on March 8th. Mm-hmm. And a lot of our goals here are we're working to have a peace convergence of women descend on March 8th and organizing a teach-ins, a concert, conferences.
Descend on what?
On D.C., sorry.
Just on the White House?
Come to the nation's capital and circle the White House with weave a web of peace around the White House with women. So we do have activities that we are planning and organizing while we are here. But I think our message is that every day needs to be an act of resistance.
Yes, yes. One of your members, Diane from Texas.
Yes, Diane Wilson.
Yes, Diane Wilson from Texas was conducting a hunger fast in front of the White House. Give us an update on her status.
Oh, yeah. So Diane Wilson is one of definitely the inspirations.
She's one of my sheroes,
oh,
by the way.
Oh, yeah, incredible woman from Texas. A mother of five, fisherwoman from Texas who's been battling oil, the contamination of the bay down in Texas, and also is taking a stand against this war. And it launched a 40-day fast in front of the White House. And as some of you listeners may know, was harassed by the Secret Service and the police, and ultimately was arrested for being in front of the White House. And banished, actually, from the
entire city.
From the entire city, and we're trying to work with lawyers to figure that out.
Is that legal?
Because we question whether banishment is really a legal thing these days.
In the real world, here in Washington, in the nation's capital, I mean, maybe in a fairy tale somewhere, banished from the kingdom.
Yeah, more like our nightmare. And but actually, that is actually just a sign of what a lot of the harassment we've received.
How was she actually harassed?
Well, she did have a stay away order for actually unfurling a banner for peace during the congressional vote, and was accused of trying to scale the fence of the White House. And
was she trying to scale the fence of the White House?
She was definitely in front of the White House trying to be seen with a message of peace. That was definitely being in, you know, the police were definitely trying not to have that happen. Mm-hmm. So she had a stay away order, which told her she couldn't be in front of the White House.
So did they recognize her from that event?
Yes. Oh, definitely. They know Diane quite well.
Okay.
And in fact, so she did was arrested again the night before Thanksgiving and told that she could not set foot in Washington, D.C., so has gone back to Texas for now, but has decided that she will take up a vigil in front of Bush's ranch in Texas. That we, you know, this does require constant vigilance no matter where you are. And I would say that, you know, it's just fascinating and also disturbing just the level to which this strong, courageous woman's act of resistance is perceived as such a threat to the administration that she would be banished. And in fact, we even had one sister who was participating in the vigil got put on a no-fly list and pulled off her plane and questioned for 5 hours about her connections to Diane Wilson. It's disturbing, but I guess in some ways it's a sign of hope that such courage and people speaking out really are ruffling the feathers of the administration.
Is she all alone in her vigil?
Oh, never. We have a community around, she in particular has a community around the country supporting her, and we are in constant contact. She has community support down in Texas, and we get emails all the time about people doing solidarity fasts, even if it isn't in a public way, but in their own home in solidarity. We have a solidarity vigil and fast that was initiated in Los Angeles in front of the federal building that is also going on daily. We have a call from a priest in McLean, Virginia, who's initiated a fast with his whole entire community in response. And so it's just been tremendous, the outpouring of support around Diane and around this movement.
I see a commentary from the Common Dreams website, commondreams.org, by Tom Turnipseed, who's familiar to many in the peace movement. The title of the commentary is W versus Sodom, Mano y Mano. And he's suggesting that they just go and, you know, personally
duke it out.
Duke it out. Like a couple of guys in the, you know, in the barnyard or in the schoolyard, rather.
Yeah.
It sounds like a good idea to me. I mean, I don't know. Maybe we can sort of push for that. Guys want to fight, go on out there.
Do it, and it would certainly be a lot cheaper than the billions of dollars that we're spending on
possibly $1.9 trillion.
Yeah, weapons and for a bombing campaign and a planned invasion. Mm-hmm. So I don't know that I would be opposed to that. Although certainly in the bigger scheme of things, I think we are peace. Yeah, exactly.
Peace.
We're trying to change the culture of violence that that leads us down this path.
Yes, Christy. Well, I want to thank you for taking the time to stop by our studios here in Washington and talk with us.
Thank you very much.
I think that on this program, we are going to launch a special segment called Dear Laura, where we're going to invite our listeners to write letters to Laura Bush.
Excellent.
And we'd like to extend the invitation to you and your members at this time.
Thank you very much.
And we'll air those letters.
Yeah, we do have a Christmas card out for passersby at the White House that we can send to Laura and President Bush, too, asking for some peace in the world.
I think that first she has to be persuaded that this war is not a good idea. And those of us who are mothers and wives and just caring members of this society, I think the onus is on us to really make sure that message is heard.
Absolutely. And you never know. Maybe the reason we haven't started dropping bombs might very well be because of Laura behind the scenes or all the women out there raising their voices.
Christy Laughlin of Global Exchange and Code Pink. The White House vigil is to continue through International Women's Day on March 8th. The burgeoning peace movement against the impending war on Iraq has been historic in many ways. One way in particular is its ability to bridge the generation gap between peacemakers. During a recent roundtable discussion at Pacifica Station KPFA in Berkeley, panelists included longtime youth organizer and poet Kyra Espinosa, who works at Kids First in Oakland. author and essayist Elizabeth Martinez, founder and co-chair for the Institute for Multiracial Justice and the author of 500 Years of Chicano History, and Michael Frante, a San Francisco Bay Area hip-hop artist and cultural organizer. He uses culture as an entry into discussions about everything from police violence to the war on terrorism. They joined Rangita Geezer and the Whalen of the KPFA Apprenticeship Program for a discussion about peace and justice.
Batita, why don't you tell us about the Institute for Multiracial Justice and how its work relates to the theme of cultivating peace?
The Institute for Multiracial Justice was started 5 years ago as a resource center to help build alliances between peoples of color and deal with the divisions that do exist between different communities of color. Historically, peace movements have been primarily led by middle-class white folks, and we think it's really important to get more people of color involved. So that's one of the things we're working on right now. That slogan that goes back years now, which was "No Justice, No Peace," I think it says a whole lot about what we have to be building. You know, we're very much involved in trying to build a strong anti-war movement, and I've also co-founded Latinos Contra la Guerra as another group of people of color working against war. There's a lot of effort we have to make to do this. Even Martin Luther King said, "Peace is not the absence of war," which, of course, in fact, the United States in particular is fighting all the time. But anyway, that it has to mean fundamental changes in human relations, national relations around the planet.
Kyra, maybe you could speak on that as well. What does peace mean on the community and street level for yourself and also the young people that you work with?
To me, when I think about peace, I think about it being when everyone has a healthy balance of mind, body, and soul. Thinking about my high school experience, I feel like for young people, peace would mean being able to communicate, to solve conflicts, and live with each other's lifestyles in respectful ways. But I think that youth culture is so influenced by mainstream media, which glorifies violence, sex, and drugs. To me, I really feel like you can't blame the young people because they're really bombarded with these types of influence on how you deal with conflict, you know? So how are you going to tell young people to not fight and then they see their president solving conflicts with war? On a certain level, I really don't think you can blame young people. At another level, if we were to invest in education and community programs, you know, we would fully invest in that. Then we could say, oh, well, this isn't working. But as of right now, that's not what's happening. So you can't really say that you're really encouraging young people and sending young people the right messages in order to hold them accountable.
That's the voice of Kyra Espinosa. Michael, I wanted to ask you the same question because, you know, you recently organized the Power to the Peaceful Festival. 20,000 people showed up to see you and many other hip-hop artists perform. So I wanted to get your definition of what peace is, but also in terms of organizing a movement. How can we use this hip-hop culture as a tool for organizing?
Well, like the sister was saying earlier, as Martin had said, peace is not merely the absence of war, but it's the presence of justice. And if we're really looking to create justice in the world, it's not something that we're going to merely stop this attack of Iraq from occurring. It's something that's going to happen over generations. And it's something that's going to occur in the same way that a tree grows. At the moment, we're in what they call a generation gap. And it's something that the system really tries to promote is this generation gap, because there was a time after Vietnam when if you ask people, is war a good thing, that generally people would say no and that the Vietnam War was a mistake. Mm-hmm. Yet now it seems like there's at least some part of the population, I don't believe it's the numbers that the system is telling us it is, but there's some part of the population who thinks, well, maybe it's okay to go and bomb these places. Maybe we can actually do something positive out of this, which is totally wrong. And in fact, all bombing is terrorism. And the weapons of mass destruction that are alleged that Saddam Hussein has, we're using those same weapons to bomb them. Peace is something that has to be taught so that there is no generation gap, so that it goes from 1 year to the next year to the next babies that are born. And I think that music is a very important part of that. And I don't know if music can change the world overnight, but I know that music has the ability to help us to make it through a difficult night and into tomorrow.
And what would a peaceful world look like to you?
A peaceful world to me starts within my own heart, and it's my own ability to develop serenity for myself, to become more mindful, to have a compassionate place from which I approach everything else, and then try to become a radiant example of how I would like the world to be. there's always going to be conflicts in the world, there's always going to be problems, but the more people that have that approach, hopefully over time, that will begin to resonate and peace will become a part of our everyday lives, whether it's us recycling or whether it's protesting or whether it's the way that we treat our families and take care of our children.
I think I'd like to comment on something that Michael's point he made, which is that the struggle for peace is not just about stopping this one war against Iraq. We really have a huge task ahead of us. What's going on now in terms of U.S. policy is really about consolidating a global empire for the United States. There's right-wing elements in the United States that said, hey, this is our chance, man, you know, let's do it. And they've been drawing up plans to consolidate the global empire of the U.S. for some time now. And that's what we're really up against. And that's why when Bush says, oh, well, you know, we may have to go to war against 30 countries in a permanent war on terrorism, thanks a lot. But I think, in a way, he means it. And so consolidating that empire is what we're up against. So I think we've got to be really strong, really, you know, develop in all the ways that Kyra and Michael have talked about.
Kyra, maybe you could speak on this. What are your thoughts on how to create peace on a community level?
Well, I think there's a lot of different ways. There was a rally against police brutality, and that a lot of young people went to that because they were protesting the 100 cops that was proposed to have in Oakland streets. And then on Election Day, there was an action at City Hall protesting that again. To me, it's really shifting the way that we think about fixing the problems. Like Michael was saying, it's not going to be an overnight thing. It's going to be long. It's going to be a change that's going to take a lot of years. So we can't look to quick fix solutions like 100 cops. You know, it really has to change the culture. You have to really invest in prevention, and instead of just thinking about punishment and incarcerating young people, I really think just more investing in programs that empower young people, that encourage them. The report on all the positive things going on. There's like events every weekend, you know, that are showcasing young talent, singers, dancers, making their own documentaries, writing in the newspapers, you know, so there's so much going on, but youth don't hear about all the positive things that are happening, not just here, you know, in their own communities or in the state or across the world. So more of that. Really making sure that all these people that are working on in different fields, on different levels, locally and globally, that all of that needs to really be highlighted, you know, because there's so many solutions being implemented, but the community just doesn't hear about it.
Kyra, I wanted to ask you, do you think that there are generational differences in young people's attitudes or understanding of peace and community organizing? And do you feel like there are enough opportunities for intergenerational work?
There probably could be more opportunities for intergenerational work. I think this program is reflecting that, you know, because it's bringing different generations together talking about the same theme. Even when you get a whole group of young organizers, like even they're going to have their differences on what they think is, you know, the best solution to organize against the war or whatever. So there just needs to be more solidarity and more like recognition that all different types of organizing and education and all of these stuff go together, you know, like there's so much like fragmentation, like categorization and saying like, oh, we need more protests or we need more teach-ins or we need more that. And really, I don't think you can just focus on one strategy. I think it's about everybody working together in a coordinated way, supporting each other's strategies, but, you know, with the one common goal of creating more a healthy environment.
And Michael, I wanted to ask you kind of the same question, you know, is there a generational difference in young people's attitudes about peace? And I'm asking you because you and me are about the same age. We're in the generation between Kyra and Batita. And I know you've been traveling, touring with your band in this country and overseas as well. And how have you seen the emergence of this peace movement in your travels?
The peace movement that we see today is part of a long legacy of movements for peace. And people point to Seattle and the WTO uprisings that occurred there, and they say that was the beginning of this thing that's happening now. And in fact, it's not. What happened in the WTO was just an extension of what people of color had started generations before in Africa, in India, in South America, in Central America, in Asia, to say that we don't want the interests of the West, which are the corporate and the military interest, to constantly be held above the human and natural interests of the world. And so now this peace movement has grown, and there is a talk, like the sister was saying before, of strategies. You know, some people think, well, should we get out in the street and throw bottles at cops? Should we organize boycotts against corporations? Should we be putting signs up over freeway overpasses? Should we be working with the corporations? What's the best approach? And the answer, really, best that I know, is just to be mindful and to understand what it is that your goal is. And if your goal is to create a lasting peace, then maybe throwing a bottle at a cop maybe feels good right now, but it's not going to do what we're trying to do for the long term. And so we have to be mindful in our approach. And in the same way that military people go off and go to West Point and they study the great military tacticians of the world, they arm themselves with the best military hardware, and they eat, breathe, and sleep militarism, we as people who are fighting for peace have to do the same thing. We have to study that those leaders for peace from before us. We have to study the peaceful philosophies of the world. We have to practice peace in the way that we live and breathe in our own lives. And then through that, we start to embody peace. And so the answers to each situation as they come up become more clear to us when our intentions are clear.
My name's Ranjita, and that was the voice of Michael Franti. We also have Kyra Espinosa in the studio and Batita Martinez on the phone, and Waylon Southern is also here. Mike, I want to ask you if you think the absence of war is peace.
Well, it's not merely the absence of war, because technically, you know, in this country we're not at war in the militaristic sense, but, you know, there's the war on drugs, which leads to a lot of violence and a lot of destruction of communities. There's an ongoing war against the environment, the natural world, which leads to, you know, the pollution and destruction of our water and our air. So there's war all the time that's taking place. And it's really about the presence of justice. It's really about balance and equilibrium more than it's just about bombs not being fired. There's constantly wars taking place, economic war, like Haile Selassie said and Bob Marley said later in the song, using the same words. Until the philosophy holds one man superior to another is permanently and finally and totally discredited, there's going to be a war.
I hear that. Batita, I want to go back just a little bit in the conversation and talk about opportunities for intergenerational work and how important that you think that is, and also what you feel the greatest hurdles might be in achieving and sustaining a peace movement.
I think certainly what I've seen is, I think, much more burdens put on young people today, specifically around the issue of violence. When I was growing up, which was centuries ago, right? But, you know, if you wanted to have a fight with somebody over something, you went with your fist to beat them up. Now you shoot them. Or in between somewhere, I think maybe people took baseball bats. But the acceleration of violence as being a common thing, guns all over the place, that's fairly new, and I think that puts a huge burden on young people. And secondly, I think the other thing is the domination of consumerist values. They were always there before, but, man, they are super there now. And so, I mean, fights over a pair of shoes, and you're nobody if you don't have a certain kind of brand of whatever. Consumerism and the violence, I think, are two real loads that young people have to deal with. And I think older folks have to be aware of that and not just say, oh, tisk, tisk, why aren't you like me when I was a teenager? Because, no, things are different. And maybe also the young people have to, perhaps an intergenerational thing is to study history more and realize that if today came out of history, the way things are today, what they face today as young people, is a result of a historical process. And for every group in the society, they have their own particular cultures and history, and they need to know them. The anti-war movement means helping people to see how their daily lives are connected with the war and how all these other forces are connected.
Ranjita Geezer and the Waylon of the KPFA Apprenticeship Program speaking with poet Kyra Espinosa, essayist Elizabeth Martinez, and hip-hop artist Michael Franti. The apprenticeship program is run under the direction of producer Amelia Gonzalez. You've been listening to a special holiday edition of Peace Watch. Peace Watch is produced in Washington by Scott Gurian. Our editor is Lona Elias. Granger Helvey is our engineer. I'm Verna Avery Brown, the executive producer, wishing you a peaceful and prosperous new year.